I'm going to present some joint work with folks at Microsoft Research on how to improve network allocation and performance isolation in data center networks. One of the key drivers in the success of data centers is the ability to multiplex a large number of applications onto a single shared infrastructure. This allows cloud computing providers to dramatically lower costs and to deliver a large amount of compute capacity on demand. As a result, the typical data center now has applications from many different sources running on them. And these applications vary greatly in how they might use the network. Our work looks at how this diverse mix of applications might share a data center network. The dominant mechanism today for sharing the data center is that of TCP, which does so on the flow granularity. This is broken, and I'm going to show you a couple reasons why. One kind of problem that TCP introduces is the potential for performance interference. A selfish user can use TCP to monopolize the network by opening a large number of connections or by bypassing TCP congestion control and using a more aggressive protocol. Malicious users can do even worse. To target a particular service or a set of VMs, the attacker can use a VM placement technique, such as those developed at UCSD, to place some Confederate VMs close to the target, and then send flooding traffic to these VMs, thus knocking the target off the network. There is growing evidence that performance interference is a concern in these data centers. We've seen a number of papers about performance anomalies in public clouds, and have seen a few anecdotal reports of runaway applications and attacks on cloud-hosted services. A common use of a data center is to run a compute cluster, such as we saw in the previous talk. Compute clusters have a clear objective, and that is to complete a computational task quickly. But even though the structure of the task is well known and the software is well known, well understood, the flow-based sharing still gets in the way. A common unit of scheduling in these clusters is by fixed computational slots for map or reduce processes. The talk before mine and after mine formalizes some notions of peeling away at the slot-based abstraction to look at the constrained resources beneath that abstraction. Because different types of slots have different numbers of flows, they'll get different amounts of the network. So those with more flows, such as a wide reduced task, might proceed faster than those with fewer flows. And these might lead to imbalances in computation. Distributed computations might also block on the critical path or on a couple of straggling results. A computation will finish faster if these sorts of bottlenecks can be accelerated, but TCP doesn't provide an easy way to boost priority. Our approach to solving these problems is based on giving network operators better control over network utilization. The kind of control we're going to give them is one that is independent of the kind of traffic that an application is generating. Now, in the context of a data center, since the end host and the network are both controlled by a single operator, we have a lot of freedom in what kind of solution we can try out. There are a couple of constraints on any solution. Restricting users to use the network in a particular way can force them to rewrite applications. Asking them for specifications on how their application might use the network can be a problem, since users don't always have that information, especially for a service that's being deployed for the first time on the cloud. The large scale of a cloud data center also poses a challenge. Any mechanism should be able to handle the large number of flows and applications that run on a cloud and the rapid change in workload that occurs. Another key concern is cost. Since the network is a scarce resource that costs money, the system should seek to maximize utilization of the network whenever there is latent demand for the network. Systems that work with commodity network devices and switches are nice, since the network operator will be able to deploy the system without first pushing a costly network upgrade into the data center. While there are many existing mechanisms for giving the operator control over network allocation in a way that's independent of TCP flows, they all fall short in some way. Many switches support fair queuing and rate limiting, which can isolate different kinds of traffic and reserve capacity for them. However, the number of flows and the number of classes of traffic that these switches can support is too small for the number of applications in the data center. Reconfiguring these switches is currently slow and cumbersome since they're hidden behind a proprietary control interface. Local rate limiting is a technique that's easy to implement and used fairly widely today. For instance, hypervisors can be configured to impose rate limits on the VMs that they host and thus protect the access link from a VM against a denial of service attack from a VM located on the particular node. But local rate limits don't do anything to protect downstream links. So if this red attacker here just manages to place a VM in the right place, it can easily knock blue off the net, off a shared bottleneck link by just pulling the rate limits from multiple VMs. Worse, local rate limits can also waste capacity in the common case, since the unused capacity from one VM won't be able to be used by another VM. One way to patch up some of these issues with local rate limiters is to combine them with reservations, which will take end-to-end considerations of the whole path into account. However, they can impose some overhead on the network and can be wasteful as well. The basic idea behind CWAL is to use congestion control, but in a way that doesn't suffer from the issues of TCP. By using congestion control, CWAL simultaneously achieves efficient network utilization and computes an allocation for different tasks within the data center without requiring any central coordination. CWAL runs the congestion control in the hypervisor. By running it in the hypervisor, the congestion control mechanism is isolated from tenant code, which might be malicious. A software-based implementation also avoids some of the flexibility limitations of current data center networking equipment. To provide operators with better control over network allocation, CWAL enables operators to specify policies in terms of per VM weights. And then CWAL will then allocate bandwidth to VMs in proportion to their weights. Weights enable a number of useful high-level policies. Beyond resource isolation, they also allow cloud operators to provide a differentiated service model. Today, they already provide a differentiated service model in terms of different classes of VMs that cost different amount of money depending on how many resources a VM provides. So for instance, a small VM might be assigned one CPU core and one gigabyte of memory. By adding support for network weights, there is a pretty straightforward way for a cloud provider to provide VMs that can use variable amounts of network capacity. Network weights also make it possible to boost the priority of lagging tasks within a distributed computation. The network allocation in CWAL is enforced by a set of tunnels. The tunnels are implemented by shims located in the forwarding path of the sender and receiver hypervisors. There is one tunnel per pair of source destination VMs, and each tunnel enforces a rate limit. This rate limit is computed by a congestion control process, which is implemented by the combination of the source and destination shims on a particular tunnel. The destination shim periodically monitors the tunnel for any congestion information, and then once every 50 milliseconds, sends this congestion information back to the source of the tunnel, which then adjusts the rate accordingly. Supporting weights, as I've described, is hard to do in a in a congestion control scheme such as the one that TCP uses. And that is because this scheme is path-oriented. I'm going to show you what I mean by this example. In this example, I have two sets of nodes, red and blue nodes. The red node on the left talks to all the red nodes on the right, and the blue node on the left talks to the blue node on the right. They share a common bottleneck link in the middle, which is indicated by the dashed line, and both VMs on the left have the same weight of 1. And these are the tunnels corresponding to this traffic matrix. In TCP, as the number of tunnels increases, the number of control loops that act on the bottleneck link will increase. The result is that the red nodes get 75% of the bottleneck link, and the blue nodes get 25% of the bottleneck link. As you can see, the effective share of the red VMs increases as the number of red destinations increases. Seawall instead ensures that there, regardless of how many tunnels the red node uses or the red set of nodes uses, there is always a constant number of control loops acting on every on the bottleneck link and indeed every other link in the network. And as a result, as the number of destinations increases, there is no change in the effective weight for the red VM on the left. So we call this a link-oriented control loop. This control loop builds on the standard congestion control loops that you might be familiar with from TCP, such as AIMD, CUBIC, and data center TCP, and so forth. We've transformed them to run in a rate limit mode and to extend them where needed to accept a weight parameter. I'll show in the next few slides how these choices allow or enable us to achieve our goals. I'm going to show this in a running example with the same topology as before. Just to remind you, the source VMs have the same weight and they share a bottleneck link. So for every edge in the network that the sender VM uses, the control loop on that VM will instantiate a graph of interconnected control loops. These control loops operate independently using congestion feedback at the link granularity. I'll hold off on how we get that information for a bit. So when red is the only node sending on the network, it will get 100% of that bottleneck link. Now suppose the blue node starts sending, then right away there will be some losses, and thanks to the standard magic of AIMD and all the other TCP control loops, the allocation of bandwidth on the bottleneck link will eventually converge to 50% between the red and the blue. In general, the share might not be 50% if the weights are selected differently. The next step is to convert these per link rate limits to the per tunnel rate limits that the data path shims implement. In the blue case, this is easy because we just need to take the min of the rates along that path. Now, the picture is more complicated for the red node since that bottleneck link is shared by multiple destinations. The naive way to divide the capacity is to split it evenly. This will only work well if the demand on each of these tunnels is indeed the same for all the tunnels. Instead, what Seawall does is it uses a greedy technique that exponentially converges the distribution of capacity to the actual demands of the tunnels. Now, to support this link-oriented control loop, Seawall needs to get a little more information from the network than TCP. One piece of information that it needs is the topology information so that it can map a set of tunnels onto the set of links that the tunnel uses. This turns out to be easy to get in the data center since it is operated by a single entity which typically will deploy some kind of network monitoring system which monitors the topology. This system can be extended to disseminate topology information and topology changes. The Perlink control loops require some link level congestion information to operate correctly. There have been some academic proposals to provide this kind of information as well as industry standards, but since none of these are yet widely available, we instead currently rely on a heuristic, which converts path level congestion feedback, such as ECM marks and losses, into link level congestion signals. The idea is that a congested link will cause path congestion on many tunnels that use it. So any congestion that's detected on the path is just charged back to the links that the path uses. Since a single link might see losses from multiple tunnels because of this, we adjust the impact of each congestion event in proportion to the ratio of traffic that a given tunnel is consuming. So in this example, a loss on this path will be propagated to all of the control loops associated with the links on the path. So now that I've explained the design of Seawall, I'll present some results from our prototype. Our prototype is built in Windows and runs both on the Hyper-V virtualization stack and natively. Both are useful since the virtualized version can be used in a virtualized cloud, and the native version can be used in a dedicated compute cluster. We've divided the prototype into two components. The first component is a user space rate controller, which implements the congestion control algorithms. That talks to a data path shim, which implements the tunnels. This separation makes it easy to swap out both components. So for instance, let's say we want a different congestion control algorithm, then we can just design a new user space rate controller and slot it in. Similarly, if we want to change the data path, say to use one that can exploit hardware offloads, we can just swap out that component separately. As with other congestion control algorithms, Seawall depends on having some sequence numbering information and other control bits in every packet. The typical approach to do this is to use encapsulation. This has a couple of problems, including adding code complexity to deal with doing zero copy encapsulation and potentially breaking hardware optimizations because you've now introduced a new kind of packet header format that the switches and the NICs and so forth don't understand. So rather than struggle with trying to get this complicated code right and eventually coming up with an encapsulation format that might cause us trouble, we came up with a trick called bit stealing. Basically what we do is we keep the headers the same. We barely change the headers, in fact, but we do find some redundant and predictable bits in standard TCP/IP headers, and then just wedge all of our data in there. Now, this is an optimization for the common case of TCP/IP traffic. Different things will need to be done for other kinds of protocols. One general technique that could work is to pair virtualize the guest to save some space for Seawall. One could also just use encapsulation. So in our evaluation, we want to answer two questions: whether Seawall achieves the level of performance that's required in a data center, and what kind of protection it provides against malicious nodes in the data center. We ran our experiments on a testbed that's representative of today's virtualized data centers. The server nodes were multi-core and had a gigabit Ethernet links, and ran a virtualization-optimized CPU and network cards. This graph shows the CPU overhead of Seawall. The y-axis here is the CPU utilization, and the three bars represent the baseline unmodified windows, a baseline filter shim, which does nothing but pass packets up and down, and Seawall with the shim running and with the rate controller running at maximum rate. So as you can see, we achieve similar overhead to the baseline shim driver without too much optimization effort. And because of this low CPU utilization, we achieve about the same level of throughput. I'm going to show you a couple of scenarios of different denial of service attacks. In all of these attacks, the red node is the attacker and the blue node is the victim. They share a common bottleneck link that's 1 gigabit per second. Red and blue get equal weight, so the ideal share should be 50-50. The first attack is a full rate UDP flood. So as you can not really see because the bar is so small, the bar on the left corresponds to the case when CVOL is not in effect. So the victim here gets almost no share of the network. By comparison, when CVOL is running, the victim gets about half of the capacity, which is what we expect given the weights that we set. And so this attack is contained. The next strategy is to have the attacker open a large number of TCP connections. So the topology is the same as before. The graph here, the y-axis is the aggregate throughput. The bars are split into two pieces. The bottom piece of the bar is the throughput that the attacker achieved, and the top part is the throughput that the victim achieved. A good result would be if both bars are the same size. So the set of bars on the left bars in each cluster correspond to the case without CVOL. And as each bar going to the right corresponds to a situation where the attacker has more and more flows relative to the victim. And as you can see, in this non-CVOL case, the attacker gets more and more share of the network. By comparison, for CVOL, the attacker gets a consistent about 50% share of the aggregate bandwidth. Now, because we have because this is a proof of concept prototype, we do see some utilization anomalies in the aggregate throughput that we see. Another strategy is having the attacker open connections to many destinations. And this exercise is our link-oriented control loop. So the format of this graph is the same as before. Y-axis is the aggregate throughput, and the cluster categories going from left to right correspond to an increasing number of destinations that the attacker sends to. Again, as the number of destinations increases, the non-CVOL case on the left gives the attacker an increasing share, while CVOL keeps the share of the attacker's share contained to 50%. Like other recently proposed transport protocols, CVOL tweaks congestion control to provide some new useful properties. Compared with other network sharing systems, CVOL achieves its resource allocation and performance isolation by using an adaptive end-to-end mechanism and without making any assumptions about the network topology. While CVOL, as presented, does not require any fancy switch functionality to work, its architecture is able to take advantage of these should they become more widely available. The architecture also fits in nicely with the industry effort to better integrate the network and the virtual switches on the end host. Congestion Manager mixes the congestion state on a single path between all of the flows using that path. By comparison, CVOL shares the congestion information between multiple tunnels whenever those tunnels share the same links. While the problem domain is different, CVOL does owe some system-level techniques to the congestion manager work. There's lots more work to do in this space. Emerging switch technologies might make this link congestion information heuristic unnecessary. So for instance, QCN, which is a IEEE Ethernet standard, provides link level congestion feedback and ships in some switches today. Research into programmable platforms, including some work presented here at NSDI, might also be adapted to provide this kind of feedback information. CWoW is just a mechanism. It'll be interesting to see how this mechanism can be incorporated into other systems, such as node placement optimizers and task schedulers. And CWoW would help these systems account for network utilization and achieve performance isolation. There are also some other useful allocation policies in data centers. One is to control how much traffic a receiver pulls out of the network, how much traffic the senders to that receiver ends up consuming. Since the receiver has as much information as the senders, albeit aggregated in different ways, we can get a receiver-driven version of CWoW by flipping things around a little bit. And that will achieve a policy which gives receivers a share of the network in proportion to their weight. Another set of policies is to consider different kinds of different units by which to assign capacity. So, for instance, distributed rate limiters are a useful way to control the network utilization of a group of entities. And distributed rate limiting and CWoW would complement each other in the performance isolation system. To summarize, today's data center networks provide very little performance isolation between different applications. Given the growth in cloud-hosted services, performance isolation will be a critical concern in the future. CWoW protects against these issues with a combination of a hypervisor-based tunnel and a link-oriented congestion control loop. CWoW achieves performance isolation and high performance on commodity hardware while maintaining efficient network utilization. And this key enabler of the link-oriented control loop is very well suited for data center networks. Thank you, and I'll take some questions now.
Hi, Steve Hand, University of Cambridge. Nice work. It seems that in many cases, your data center links aren't going to be the bottleneck link. I mean, obviously they can be, but in many cloud services, you're actually serving people out in the, you know, the big bad internet. Do you have any intuition about how well this might scale, if you could, whether it would scale, you know, to an internet-wide kind of topology, or is that just not going to work?
Well, the challenge with scaling out to the internet or deploying this in the internet is that the topology information is harder to get in the internet. And in fact, most ASs guard that pretty closely. So there's a bunch of challenges to resolve before CWoW can be deployed in that context.
Okay, thanks.
Yvonne from Yale. So actually I have two questions. So the first one is we all understand that if you want to do some like congestion control in the intermediate links, then you would have some like interaction with the end-to-end TCP congestion control. So I want to understand, like, did you test how this interaction can impact on the TCP throughput if you do not modify any TCP congestion control?
We didn't look at not modifying it. I mentioned that we took some systems technique from Congestion Manager, and one of them is having the flows delegate their congestion control behavior to another implementation of congestion control. In our case, it is CWoW.
Oh, so did you modify the TCP stack? So my question is.
Yeah, we changed the TCP stack on Windows to respect the congestion windows and other sorts of parameters passed up from CWoW. Now that doesn't mean that CWoW relies on the congestion control in the guest. We're just making sure the guest does what we want so that they don't mess themselves up with TCP on TCP issues.
Okay. Another question is basically you have to do like a link-oriented congestion control. So basically, I'm wondering, like, is there any feedback delay for basically for this control to behave well? I mean, do you have to train any parameters like how fast or if you test like the bandwidth clearly you want to decrease, do you have any like idea like you want to set a like a fixed like a target value or you want to gradually move to that target? Yeah.
We use TCP Cubic to which is less sensitive to feedback delays in terms of how it converges. So that's how we deal with that problem.
Okay, thanks.
So the ATF has a working group called Congestion Exposure, and there's some work from Bob Briscoe a while ago called Refeedback. So that seems very similar to your mechanism of rate adaptation based on, enforcing a response to congestion, if you want. So basically what they have is some scheme that incentivizes people to actually behave well. So I was wondering whether you are aware of that work or whether it doesn't do all that you want or something.
I'm not familiar with that work off the top of my head. Is that a congestion signaling work?
Yeah.
Okay, because the I think the if that is the kind of work I'm thinking of, which is to charge congestion as do congestion pricing, that sort of scheme can suffer from a sort of a long response that we have to wait until the bill is given to the customer before the customer fixes himself. And if the person paying the bills is a bad guy who is not actually paying the bills because he's compromised some nodes, then that does not help.
So it's actually online. It's not it doesn't involve the user.
I'm going to have to encourage you guys to finish this in the break, which will be in half an hour. All right. The final speaker in our session, actually, I'm sorry. Let's thank the speaker one more time. Thank you.